The strawberries taste like strawberries. The snozberries taste like snozberries.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Snozberries? Who ever heard of a snozberry?
Hey, Cyrus, you got to turn the TV off. We're doing a radio show over here.
I'm having fun.
All right. Hey, did you know that roadways, you know, like roads and boulevards and highways, did you know that those are racist?
Come again?
I mean, of course you knew that roadways are racist, right? You knew that, right?
Stupid is and stupid does, sir.
All right. Well, let me get you up to speed here. Pete Buttigieg.
Up to speed. I see what you did there.
Yeah. I gave you an opening.
It took a second.
Yeah, took a second. I waited to see if you would get that. Okay. So CNN political analyst and White House correspondent April Ryan pressed Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg Monday to explain how he would, quote, deconstruct the racism that was built into the roadways. Buttigieg spoke...
How do you even read that without laughing?
I know. And how do you get a job making big money at a major media outlet and ask questions like that? But, I mean, they love that stuff over there at CNN. They love it. So how are you going to deconstruct the racism that was built into the roadways? That was the question. So Buttigieg spoke about the $1 trillion infrastructure bill that has been recently passed by the House during a White House briefing where he was asked to outline his plan to address the racism that undergirded public transportation infrastructure. The Secretary of Transportation said that the investment programs that could potentially benefit the disadvantaged communities would be reviewed in a program-by-program, mode-by-mode basis. Now, this, by the way, is an article from the Daily Caller. He said, some people were surprised when I pointed to the fact that if a highway was built for the purpose of dividing a white and black neighborhood, or if an underpass was constructed such that a bus carrying mostly black and Puerto Rican kids was designed too low for it to pass by, then that obviously reflected the racism that went into those design choices. He said he claimed, Buttigieg claimed that the $1 billion that was earmarked to go to remedying the damage wrought in those communities was in the budget. He says, but that's such a heavy lift. You have to reconstruct communities that this happened to. The reporter pressed him further, saying, how do you go about redefining and replanning these roadways in communities that are already settled in? And the secretary said, it's going to vary by community. We have to listen to a community. He says, one size fits all is not an option. They don't have a one size fits all option. But there is this idea, anyway, that even the roadways are racist, because at least the claim is that they were constructed in such a way as to disadvantage certain people by race. I don't think that that's true, but I can see how that notion would easily fly nowadays. You know, that people would say, oh my gosh, yes, look how racist these freeways are. Look at that overpass over there. Can't you see how racist it is? I think that's probably going to fly. So I imagine that some of the infrastructure dollars may be put to use, not so much because of where things are needed, but rather to redress real and imaginary grievances along those lines. I just thought you should know about that. You live a sheltered existence.
That's bonkers.
Mm-hmm. Furthermore, the director of national intelligence at the White House, her name is Avril Haines, she just suggested that there might be extraterrestrial UFOs out there. So this article here by David Hookstead, are there UFOs out there using alien technology flitting around our skies? This theory has been floated time and again as UFOs become more mainstream. And you can now add the director of national intelligence, Avril Haines, to the list of people who have speculated publicly about the explanation possibly being from off this world. Haines said, when discussing UFOs at the Our Future in Space event, she said, always there's also the question of, is there something else that we simply do not understand which might come extraterrestrially? Haines joins a growing list of people who are speaking publicly about UFOs being possible alien technology. There are some possibilities, of course, could be Russian, could be Chinese. Some people even go so far as to claim that they are demons masquerading as aliens. I don't buy into that theory personally. I don't find it, you know, convincing. But what's the third option? You know, if it's not demons, and I don't think it is. I'm talking here about the UFO phenomenon. You know, the lights in the sky. I mean, this is real. I mean, there's stuff up there. There are amazing and inexplicable phenomena in our skies. We've seen the videos. You've seen the videos. I've never actually seen one that I know of anyway. I don't think I've ever actually seen anything with my own eyes, but I've looked at a lot of the videos and they seem quite compelling to me. So as I tick off the different possibilities, okay, if you know, some people say it's alien, or I'm sorry, it's demons. Again, I don't buy that theory. Well, what else is it if it's not that? It's either our technology or it's Russian or Chinese. I don't know that any other country would have the budget in the advanced information to do something like that unless it was in concert with us and or with Russia or China. So if it's not from one of the major countries in this planet, then, well, what else is it? Well, the only third option I can think of is that it's extraterrestrial. And if it's extraterrestrial, then, of course, the question is, if there is intelligent life on other planets or someplace else, what are they doing here? And I don't know which scenario is more palatable. Which one do you prefer, Cyrus, that China or Russia has super advanced aircraft that we can't begin to match, or that it's an alien race that's flitting around in our skies with advanced equipment that we can't match? Neither one looks very, very appealing to me.
Yeah, all of those are scary. I'm going to go with aliens. I'm hoping it's aliens. Fingers crossed.
So you're not saying it's aliens, but it's aliens.
That guy is great. That guy. He's awesome.
So, I mean, it's something. And the military, the Navy, the Air Force have declassified a number of these things. And even they say, we don't know what it is. Not us. We don't know what it is. So it's something. What is it? Well, I guess we'll find out in due time.
I hope so.
You'll be like Will Smith when you get up in the morning to go out to the front porch to get your newspaper, and you look up in the sky, and there's a gigantic,
welcome to Earth,
you know, 20-mile-wide flying saucer in the sky.
They finally come to take me home.
Shouldn't we just check out the Simpsons archive to find out what it is? Because they will certainly know.
That's a good point. Yeah, good point.
I mean, the Simpsons seems to predict all kinds of things that wind up coming true. Anyway, so there's that. Just thought I'd brighten your day with, hey, it's either aliens or it's Russia and China beating us on the technological front. Neither one looks very good. And the demons, if you want to entertain that theory, that doesn't look very good either.
I don't want to entertain that theory at all. I don't like that.
So if it's one of the three, which one do you choose if aliens. You had to choose?
Aliens.
You're going with aliens. Yep. Okay. I mean, at least we can reason with Russians and Chinese people. I don't know if we can reason with aliens.
Aliens might bring the world together because we'd realize that we're all on this, you know, floating rock hurtling through space together.
So what if one of those big craft shows up over New York City and starts blasting We Are the World on loudspeakers and just playing that until we stop fighting with each other? Because we go so crazy from that song.
Right. Or they just start playing Baby Shark until we all get along.
Mass Psychosis.
You did that story a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. It was like a torture for criminals.
Mm-hmm.
They could just torture us until we all got along.
Yeah. None of the three possibilities appeals to me. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Brian in De Pere, Wisconsin. Hello, Brian.
Good morning. Hello, Patrick and Cyrus.
Yeah.
Just want to make an observation. Was listening to your commentary about racist structures like bridges and roads and thought that if those are racist, then there has never been more of a racist constructed facility than an abortion clinic based on where what they're designed to do, such as black baby genocide, and where they're placed. Just my observation.
Yeah, because they typically are placed in low-income and minority communities. And so your point, I guess, and I would concur with you, is that the abortion industry tends to focus upon the poor and ethnic minority communities for the lion's share of their clientele. That's the point you're making, right?
It is the point I'm making. I think it's also ironic that the side that tends to promote that is the one that promotes racism or decries racism more than anybody, and they're the ones that are promoting this more than anybody as well. So
yeah, that's true.
That is what I had to say.
Well, thank you, Brian. I appreciate that, and happy trails to you. You know, I finished a biography of Dwight Eisenhower, Cyrus, and it's astonishing the way in which the political narrative has changed just since he left office. So he left office in January of 1961. So President Kennedy, elected in the 1960 election, succeeded him. And this book is like an 800-page book, it seems. Maybe it's not quite that long, but it's voluminously footnoted and detailed. And what's fascinating is in that span of time, or at least going back to that time, the Democratic Party was, for the most part, adamantly opposed to desegregation. They were adamantly opposed to the Civil Rights Act, adamantly opposed to, you know, making the steps forward, the progress that was made in the area of lifting the Jim Crow laws, for example, making it illegal to say to a black person, you have to get up from your seat because I'm white and I'm going to sit there, and all the many other strides that were made in the right direction here. It was largely opposed by Democrats, and it was championed by Republicans. Now, it doesn't mean to say that Dwight Eisenhower was, you know, Martin Luther King, but he did do an awful lot of good things. And I think some of it was he felt that there was no choice for him but to do those things, regardless of his own personal opinions. But I think he personally was against racism. But it's just remarkable when you see that all these major strides, at least from a political standpoint, were made by conservative Republicans. And that's absolutely unknown, it seems now, how the pendulum has swung in a certain respect, which is not to say that Republicans are going in the other direction. It's just that their role in promoting racial harmony and justice in this country is largely now forgotten. Isn't that interesting, Cyrus? You're nodding your head.
I am. I'm nodding. Oh, yeah. I have to talk. It's a microphone. Yes. Very interesting.
It's like when the kids call, and little kids, they call on the radio to ask a question, and they're
waving,
they're nodding their heads.
Yeah,
but
they're
waving
don't realize. To Grandpa Patrick instead of saying hello.
Yeah, they're nodding their heads, not realizing that I can't see them. So Mom is in the background saying, use your words. Say it.
I can hear that on this show sometimes when the kids call in. You can hear
that's
the
cute.
It's fun.
As long as we're talking about this general category, let me get one more news story out of the way. University of Maryland has created a new racial category called Students of Color Minus Asian.
What?
Yeah. This is an article by Chrissy Clark. We'll get this posted for you. A photo emerged Thursday of last week of a chart comparing freshman admission rates at the University of Maryland between two categories, white or Asian students and students of color minus Asian. Are you confused yet?
Yes.
Okay. The photo has the University of Maryland's logo attached to the bottom. The chart compared admissions and enrollment rates among freshmen in the fall of 2017 to admission rates in the fall of 2021. The data showed that general admissions have gone up, as have average weighted GPAs, according to the chart posted by journalist Christopher Rufo. The chart classifies students by race, though the university opted to create a new racial category called Students of Color Minus Asian. Asian students aged 18 to 24 have the highest nationwide college enrollment rates, averaging approximately 60%, according to a 2020 study by the National Center for Education Statistics. The University of Maryland shared a statement with the Washington Examiner stating that the data was designed to show unrepresented student populations, which does not include Asian students. During his annual State of the Campus address, President Pines, this is according to the University Diversity and Inclusion website, during his annual State of the Campus address, President Pines shared information about the demographics of the freshman class, including information about the diversity of the class. The data in this specific section of the slide refers to student populations that are considered underrepresented on our campus. So they created this separate category for Asian students. The university boasts of its underrepresented minority category, which includes students who are African American, Black, Hispanic, American Indian, and Native Hawaiian. Asians are categorized as other minority alongside students who identify as multiple races. It seems like it's awfully unnecessary to go to those lengths to present information in a way that you want it to look. And maybe that's just me. So 888-914-9149. Let's go to Philip in Salt Lake City. Good morning, Philip.
Good morning. I do have one example of a roadway that was, in fact, intentionally built to impact negatively certain community of color.
Okay.
However, and I'll get to that in just a second, but this is the SUV and SUV.
Philip, your phone is going haywire. I can't hear you. Let's give it another try. Go ahead.
Anyway, the can you hear me better now?
Yes.
Okay. The issue is, it's the people who designed the road that did something untoward. It's not the road or the SUV that used to run into crowds when people were trying to say that SUVs were bad.
I mean, obviously, the car can't do anything. It's the driver that does it. And yeah, I fully grant that there must have been instances where roads were built in a certain way, or maybe they blocked off certain neighborhoods. I have no doubt that there was some racism behind some of those things.
Right. And that's my point. But it's not the road that's racist. It's the people who designed the roads, which in my case were Democrats in Louisiana in the 60s and 70s, which were Jim Crow kinds of things that were deciding where the interstates should go.
Yeah, the reason that I phrased it the way I did is because that's the way Pete Buttigieg had discussed it in the person from CNN asking the question. So it was the way the issue was framed by the press and in that conversation that was noteworthy. You know, that there's racism
in the roads. Right, I know, but it annoys me in the same way that it used to annoy me when someone would say, or a reporter would say, the SUV ran into the crowd. You know, no, it was a driver,
right,
who ran into
it's
the
like,
crowd.
It's like the saying, "Guns don't kill people; people kill people." Kind of like that, right?
Right, exactly. Right. So anyway, but I mean, yeah, it, historically, bad things were done with roads, but it wasn't the road; it was the people. So that's my point.
That's a good point. Yeah. It seems self-evident but to you and to me, but it's a point well worth making. All right. Thanks, Philip.
Take care.
Good talking to you. Let's go to Deacon Martin in Gary, Indiana. Good morning, Deacon Martin.
Good morning. I'm going to echo what the gentleman just said before, because in Chicago, when they built the highways, the interstate highway system, they split neighborhoods in half and they pushed them through Black communities. And so there's a lot of, when they built the interstate highway system, there was a lot of racism in how the roads were designed and where they were placed. And when you and Cyrus is there laughing and giggling, making snarky comments, it's not it's offensive. As a person,
it shouldn't be offensive, because it wasn't snarkiness toward the issue of racism at all, but the way that it was being discussed by Pete Buttigieg and the lady from CNN. That was the focus of our amusement. Well, I'm clearing it up for you right now.
But it doesn't clarify that way.
But I'm clarifying it for you right now, Deacon Martin, so that you understand what I meant.
But I've heard you say many times that there was no racism in how the roads were put in, and there's a lot of racism in it.
Okay.
I mean, you've said before, you don't know this, but it's not hard to find the way the roads were put. Mayor Daley had the roads built across Chicago. Everybody lives in this part of the country knows that it was the divided communities.
Okay, Deacon Martin, I already said that earlier, and I explained the meaning of what I said. You can take it or leave it.
Goodbye.
Thank you. Quick time out. We'll be right back right after this. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. She calls me. The radio reminds me of my home. have a special place in God's plan for the world. Learning about Christ's role in history can change your life and strengthen your faith. Right now, get free access to Christendom College's online history class at principlesclasses.com/Madrid.
Real life solutions you can believe in. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
Hey, Bill Moody, that was a good one. I just saw that on Twitter. I get your point, man. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Let's go to Peggy now in Sacramento. Hi, Peggy. Hi, Peggy.
Hello? Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes. Yes, Patrick. I'm so confused and so disturbed because a family member, we just had a gathering a few days ago, and from there, and that time, I found out that my daughter-in-law's brother, who had a long-time boyfriend living, just got married. And and then, so...
So wait, what's the relationship? You say it's the... Tell me again, what's the relationship to you?
Yeah, my daughter-in-law's brother.
Okay, daughter-in-law's brother.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, brother. And so, and they got married, and then next week they're inviting, I mean, the mother invited us, or my daughter-in-law invited us to go for Thanksgiving, you know, luncheon. And I believe they're coming too. Mm-hmm. But even a few days ago when I found out about that, my daughter, you know, congratulate them, and I was nearby there, and then he wanted to show the picture, and then I cannot say congratulations, and I walk away, you know, quietly, but I believe he knew. So now I'm just so disturbed, I don't know how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, you're not the one who should be walking on eggshells. You've done nothing wrong. And if you've expressed your opinion on something, you have the right to do that. So
yeah,
are you wondering...
How should I say that?
Well, I mean, if they come up to you and they say, hey, what do you think about this situation? Then you could say, well, I don't think it's a good idea. I think it's immoral. But if they don't ask you for your opinion, you're not obliged to say anything. I mean,
yeah, I don't. But then, because everybody say, oh, congratulations. And
yeah,
then
you just refrain.
You know?
Yeah, you're quiet. And they're going to look at you and say, oh, why is she quiet? Why isn't she happy? Oh, she's one of those kind of people. Who cares? Who cares what they think? You know the truth.
Should I explain it? Should I explain it that I don't, I love you, you know, but then I just don't, believe in same-sex marriage?
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. If they come up to you and say, we want to know what you think about this situation, then you can either say, I'm not going to tell you, or you could tell them. But if they don't specifically ask you what your opinion is, mm-hmm. I don't see any reason why you should feel obligated to say anything. You know?
Oh, okay. So I just be quiet then just smile or whatever, because if I'm sitting at the table and then everybody kind of talk about it and they show pictures and then I don't want to see the pictures either.
Yeah, I understand completely.
Is it okay?
So, yeah, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say, no. Peggy, is you shouldn't have to change your life or feel marginalized because you believe what you believe. You have that right. You have that freedom. I mean,
yeah, but the second question now is, you know, a few days ago when I go to that gathering, it's for my daughter-in-law's baby shower. So now I think ahead, you know, what happened, you know, if they're there all the time, or I hope not, but how should I say it, you know, that if, you know, if my grandchildren already getting a little bigger, how should they behave or whatever, something like that. I don't know. I want to tell the mother because the mother apparently paid for it.
How old are the children, your grandchildren?
Your grandchildren, baby is coming in December 6th.
Okay.
So that's why, I mean, it's not yet coming, but... why we had that baby shower.
So in this case, okay, so in this case, this is a little baby who's not even here yet, at least not out of the womb. So there's no danger of like scandal to a little child because the baby's too small. So for me, Peggy, it seems like if I were in your situation, I would do one of two things. Either not go and not put yourself through. I mean, you're obviously worked up about this, and understandably, I'm not criticizing you. You're uncomfortable, you're worried, you're anxious, and life's too short. So if you want to spare yourself that situation and not go through that, then just don't go. Just say, you know, I'm sorry, we're not able to make it this year. And you don't have to explain yourself. If you decide to go and enjoy some good food and these two men are there, you can be polite and you can just enjoy everyone else's company and not participate if they want to look at the wedding pictures and things like that. I mean, you can sit that one out. It really will come down to what is your threshold, what's your tolerance for this? And if it were me, I would do one or the other. But don't put yourself through all this anguish. You know, especially if it's causing you this anxiety, maybe the easiest thing would be to just say, I'm not going to go. We'll have Thanksgiving at our house with other friends or something like that. And I hope it works out, Peggy. I understand where you're coming from, but this is something that you're not going to be able to fix. So if I were you, I would do one of those two things. Thanks, Peggy. How about Janine in Naperville, Illinois? Good morning, Janine.
Good morning. Hi, Patrick.
Hi there.
My comment really, I was just listening to the woman who was asking about the reports about giving to charity.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to have found one that I really like, so I thought I would pass that along.
Sure.
Then I have a quick question too. So that it's called Lepanto Institute, and you can find it at lepantoin.org. And when you go under that, you would look under charity reports.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can each, there's quite a few that they show if they're safe or not safe. And then they tell you if they facilitate things like birth control, abortion, LGBT activism, Marxism, and heresy.
Okay.
And then you can kind of go into each thing too and kind of read about them. So that I found that very helpful.
Okay. Good to know.
And then I wondered, because it seems like you support Christendom College. Mm-hmm. I have a son who is applying there, and just kind of wondering any comments about what you think of Christendom, or if any of your kids
that's
went,
a softball question. I'm very happy to say that I highly recommend Christendom College. I've been on the campus many times. I have very high regard for the founder of Christendom College, the late Dr. Warren Carroll. And he had this idea of starting this college, which at that time was sort of in the middle of nowhere. And it's a beautiful campus. The academics are superior, fidelity to the church, very faithful. So I have nothing but good things to say about Christendom College, always have. And to boot, they're also friends of the network. So, you know, we very much appreciate the good work that they do, and I'm always happy to recommend them.
Okay. Wonderful.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks very much.
You're welcome, Janine. Thank you. Oh, by the way, before you go, I had the opportunity to, the privilege really, to give the commencement address last year to the graduating class of 2020. And that is available on YouTube. So if you were to either go to the Christendom.edu website, you could find it there, I'm sure. Or if you just search for it on YouTube, look for Christendom College Commencement 2020, and you can see what I had to say to the graduating class last year.
Okay. Yeah, awesome. I know that you also have the principles for your week. Although, yeah. Is that just through the college, or are you on that as well?
Principles is produced by Christendom College. Yeah, that's their publication. So
okay.
You may have heard me talk about
I'll
it
look
on.
You up.
Yeah, it's there. and it was one of those situations with COVID being what it was in 2020. The commencement ceremony was not able to happen in May of that year, so they had to move it to, I think it was the end of August or beginning of September. I forget which, but it was good that they were able to walk in any case.
Yeah. Well, we're all the way in Illinois, and this would be a long way away for us, but it does seem like an amazing college and campus.
Yeah, it's really good. And have you had a chance to visit it yet?
I haven't.
I think you're going to like it. It's perched on a bluff over the Shenandoah River. And what's interesting is the Shenandoah River makes a very dramatic bend right there on, I guess, what would that be? Probably the western side of the campus. So there's a promontory that you can go, and there's, you know, benches and things. But it's a beautiful lookout, very serene, and you're quite high up above the river. So you have a very beautiful view of the Shenandoah River. I've always liked that part myself.
Okay. Yeah. Amazing.
All right.
Well, thanks again.
You're welcome, Janine. Yeah, enjoy your visit. And I think your son, if he does wind up going to Christendom, he'll enjoy it quite a bit. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Peg in Fulda. Good morning, Peg.
Hey, good morning, Patrick. It sounded like you were describing Benedictine College when you were describing Christendom, because
I've never been to the bend
of the Missouri, I think.
Mm-hmm. I've never been to Benedictine, but I do have two nephews who are attending Benedictine, and they love it there. Every time I see them, they're just excited
our daughter
about
it. We had a daughter go down there. It's a beautiful school. But on to my question, when you guys started talking about aliens, I figured maybe I could throw a random question at you that I've been thinking on. So, and it has nothing to do with aliens, but we have faith formation classes. I've got a group of sixth grade kids, and they're a smart bunch. And they came across the term in their book, culpable ignorance. Mm-hmm. And I thought perhaps you could explain that on like a upper elementary level, and then I could share your response back, because the teacher asked me to explain it, and I was kind of taken aback. I couldn't do it. So I thought maybe you could do it for me.
I'll give you my best shot. So culpability, of course, means that you're guilty of something, that you're responsible for something having happened. So it simply means that if you're ignorant and it's your own fault that you're ignorant, then it's your own fault. So if it's not your fault, if you had no way of knowing, then that could be called invincible ignorance. That's another term that describes how you're not at fault for your ignorance. You just didn't know, and you had no way of knowing. Mm-hmm. Now, vincible ignorance, now the root word here from the Latin, it means to conquer. So invincible ignorance means inconquerable or unconquerable ignorance. Vincible ignorance would be akin to culpable ignorance, meaning that you could have learned this, and you should have learned this, you should have known this, but you didn't. Therefore, you're culpable for your own ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
So could you give maybe an example that would be like on a, you know, 11, 12-year-old child understanding of what that would be? Because I get that as an adult.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, there's ways you can just intentionally turn a blind eye towards something. But on, you know, for a kid who's just entering into a stage of a lot of decision making, mm-hmm. can you think of an example?
Yeah, I'm sure if we thought about it long enough, we'd come up with many. let's say, so mom and dad have the spirits that they occasionally have, you know, adult beverages. They have that in a cabinet, and the 12-year-old gets into it and tries some. And, you know, his parents never said to him directly, you can't have that. You know, mm-hmm. and he could say, well, I didn't know I couldn't have that. Well, you should have known you couldn't have that, because common sense would tell you that that's for adults, not for children. You know, common sense would tell you that you're under the age of the legal drinking age. So you can claim to be ignorant that you didn't know, but you should have known, because common sense would have told you that you shouldn't be getting into that. I would say, you know, there's an example of culpable ignorance.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that helps. I appreciate it.
Okay, great.
Thanks.
Well, I appreciate your call, Peg. Thank you very much. How about a break? We'll do that now and come back with more of your comments and questions. The number to dial is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. By the way, Check out this article from CNN. Of all things, baby formula is getting harder and harder to find. I'll give you a few updates on that. And one of the reasons it's getting harder to find might surprise you. I'll be right back. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
All right. Hey, by the way, we were just talking about Kristen of college a minute ago. I don't know if this is serendipity, but their Twitter account just posted. They must have been listening because this is too much of a coincidence. They just posted a beautiful, I mean, a breathtakingly beautiful, looks like drone footage to me, of the Christendom College campus. And they actually show that bend in the Shenandoah River that I was talking about. And one of the most striking things is their new chapel, this beautiful Gothic chapel. It just soars into the sky. You can see it for miles around, it seems. And if you want to get a quick glimpse at the beauty of Christendom College's campus, and of course the new chapel that I don't even know if it's open yet. I don't think it's open yet. But take a look at this. I just retweeted it. And it's a treat, if nothing else, just because of the beauty and also the fall colors. So that's there on my Twitter feed, at Patrick Madrid. How about Georgia, or Georgia, rather, in Monticello, Wisconsin? Hi, Georgia.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? Okay. Yeah, I've been listening to the comments about the roadways and they're racial, and then the gentleman called from Chicago, a deacon, mm-hmm. and I think he actually might be on to something, because he alluded to Mayor Daley. What he did not allude to, and you probably know this, and I was born in Chicago, Mayor Daley ruled Chicago with an iron fist for many years. He was referred to as Lar Daley. And what he didn't allude to was that Lar Daley was, in fact, a Democrat. So perhaps he has a point. I think it's interesting that the Democrats now are talking about the racial construction, how roadways were constructed. But this particular caller did not identify Mayor Daley as a Democrat. So it's food for thought, I think.
Food for thought, for sure. You may remember, I don't know if you heard that part of my commentary earlier than that, where I was talking about in this biography of Eisenhower, which is critical of him in certain ways. Yes. It wasn't, you know, a puff piece or anything like that. But it was very meticulously documented. And it's just another one of those reminders that, especially during the height of the civil rights movement, you know, by the time you get to President Johnson, but well before that even, there was a significant resistance on the part of Democrats for anything that would advance the cause of racial equality in this country. They resisted it. They didn't like it. They didn't want it. They wanted segregation. They didn't want the desegregation of schools. They did not want to lift the Jim Crow laws. And it's all on record. I mean, it was a very blatant resistance on the part of the Democrats to racial equality. And the irony is, at least in terms of how people view things nowadays, is that it was the Republicans who were the ones who were largely advancing this. You know, they weren't perfect themselves by any stretch, but these are details that seem to have been forgotten. And I find that interesting. So to your point, it is interesting to note who was in power when many of these roadways were engineered.
It is. I just wanted to make that comment because I agree. I think people slant things to their own political view, but they need to, and I think you do a good job of relating the total picture.
Well, I try. I'm sure I'm not perfect at it, but I do try, that's for sure. Well, thank you, Georgia. Kind of you to enter into the conversation. I appreciate that. How about Jen now in Philadelphia, city of brotherly love? Good morning, Jen.
Good morning, Patrick. I have a question. Do you know anything about a man named John Leary who apparently is an alleged seer who says he received messages from Jesus?
I've heard the name. I think I may have read a few things. But I, if ever this topic comes up on the show, I tend to say the same thing. I don't put any stock in people who say, I'm getting visions, I'm getting revelations, I'm a seer. I don't put any stock in that at all. If somebody is an authentic seer, then eventually that will come out. And then when the church approves it, I'll be more than happy to pay attention. That's for sure. But in the meantime, there are zillions of people out there who are claiming to be seers, zillions of people who are claiming to be receiving locutions and revelations and things like that. And I just simply ignore them. So I am familiar with the name, but not much more than that.
Okay. Well, I agree with you. I believe that we should not listen to this until the Catholic Church has had a full review and approves, get or denies it. The reason why I'm calling about it is because my mother listens to these messages, and she's upsetting my husband regarding the vaccination because of the fact that we have school-age children. They may be required to get the vaccinations. We are not going to get the vaccinations for our children unless the school board says that they have to get them, and my mother is very upset about that, and Thanksgiving is coming. So I wanted
to— Wait, your mother is upset about what, that the kids are not getting vaccinated?
She does not want them to get vaccinated.
I see. Okay. I see.
Based on the information she's getting from these messages.
Well, I would not look to a self-proclaimed seer for anything that's related to science or medicine. You know, I wouldn't.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I'll do my best to talk to my mother about it as gently as possible.
Yeah. I know it's going to be probably a little tense, but she loves her grandchildren. She doesn't want to see any harm come to them, so I'm sure her motives are very good. Isn't it amazing how COVID and the vaccine, it's not a vaccine, how COVID and the vaccine have just pulled this country apart, and how divided it has made people. And it just, to me, that's the worst of all the things that have happened as a result of COVID. You know, the economy, bad, a lot, you know, obviously people who have died, that's terrible too. But one of the lingering after effects is the division within families and among friends. And that's very deplorable if you ask me.
It certainly means diabolical. It means to tear apart, rare asunder. And I think that's what it's doing to this country.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, thanks, Jen.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Let's see. Yeah, we have time. Let's go to Savannah now in Whittier. Hello, Savannah.
Hi.
Hi there.
Good morning. Hi. So I have a question. I spoke to you, it was a couple of months ago because I was undergoing my RCIA classes. Mm-hmm. And just a really quick question. So I started to learn how to pray the rosary. Mm-hmm. And so I was praying the other night, and I just wanted to see, is it still a valid prayer if I am using like a pamphlet to read off the prayers?
Of course. Yeah. You're not, your prayer is not, it's not like a sacrament where your prayer is invalidated if you do it a certain way. Don't think of prayer that way. Prayer is you speaking to God. You know, you're speaking to Him. You're listening to Him. And if you're using a prayer that's printed on a leaflet, for example, or out of a prayer book or your Bible, that's good. If that helps you order your thoughts and focus your mind on what you're praying for, that's certainly fine. Savannah?
Yes?
I just wasn't sure if you were still there. I wanted to make sure you could hear me.
Oh, yeah, I can hear you. Yeah, because I got a pamphlet from actually one of my teachers at my RCIA program class, and you know, it has like the Hail Marys and the the Hail Marys and the Apostles' Creed and all that stuff. But I just wanted, like, I don't have them memorized yet, and so I was kind of like, you know, holding my beads and then just like kind of reading. But I really want to eventually, like, be able to meditate it fully. Mm-hmm. But I'm just not, you know, I just don't have them all memorized yet.
Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to see if it was still going to be a valid prayer, even though I'm using my little pamphlet to read.
Right. Oh, sorry. Well, I'll just repeat myself because maybe it bears repeating. Your prayer is not going to be invalidated if you have a pamphlet. You know, your prayer is good in itself. You're seeking to communicate with God. You're praising him and thanking him and telling him you're sorry for your sins and petitioning for things that you or other people need. That's the essence of prayer. Whether you have a piece of paper guiding your thoughts or not, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. If it helps you to pray better that way, great. But there's no way in which your prayer could be quote-unquote invalidated. It's not like God's going to say, uh-oh, look, she's holding a piece of paper. I'm not going to listen.
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
Okay. And then just one more really quickly. Before I start to pray the rosary, when is it good to throw my prayer intention in?
There's no set place.
Basically, like what I'm... There's no set place. Okay.
Yeah, so Lord, I'm in Our Lady, of course, I'm praying for these people, for all of my family, or I'm praying for this person who's going to have an operation, or I'm praying for whatever it may be, or I'm praying for all these different things, or for all the people I've told that I would pray for, I'm praying for them now. You can be thinking about them during your prayer. You can mention at the beginning. There's no technicality about any of this. You just, when you pray, you just open your heart and your mind to the Lord, and you ask him for the things that you're petitioning for. And mm-hmm. he understands. There's no specific way to go about doing it. I hope that's helpful, Savannah. And when you pray next time, please pray for me. I'd sure appreciate that. How about Frank in New York City? Good morning, Frank.
Oh, thank you, Patrick. God bless you.
Thank you.
I try to keep you in my prayers too, Patrick.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm a little, I'm confused on a couple of things. I have, like, it's like a two-part question. Maybe you could help me, Patrick.
Okay, I'll try.
I've been reading an ex-cathedra statement, and I've seen this by several different popes. I'm basically talking about Eugene IV at the Council of Florence, mm-hmm. 1441, I believe it was, where he is, like, unequivocal that schismatics, heretics, pagans, unless they remain in the bosom of the Catholic Church, mm-hmm. can't be saved. Or, you know, if they left, unless they come back before the end of their lives.
Right.
And that doesn't seem to be the case today, even though this is a infallible statement. And I've seen this by quite a few popes in the past several hundred years. So,
Well, you know, if I can interrupt,
yeah.
That was restated very forcefully in the Second Vatican Council in the document called Lumen Gentium. Section 14 is where it says that anybody who either refuses to enter into the Catholic Church or remain in it cannot be saved. So there it just simply reiterates that same teaching of no salvation outside the Church, and that's as recently as Vatican II.
Okay. All right. Well, that sort of clears that up for me. Patrick, I have a friend. I don't know. You may have to hold me over for this, and it's because I'm agonizing over this. And I was his best man at his wedding. He was a Protestant, mm-hmm. and he got married, and everything was fine. And then the girl left him in the Protestant church. They were married, and he stood good for 30 years. And then in the same church, he met a Catholic girl who's evident she was married. She fell away from the church. And they went to the pastor to say, could you marry us? And he said, no, I can't. I already married you, you know, mm-hmm. many years ago. And yet he did it anyway. Now, he was a Protestant, and she's a Catholic. They both have children. But I want to know, and I keep trying to witness them, are they living in sin? I mean, as far as this is concerned, I mean, with the limited information that you have, it seems so to me. I can't get around.
So they were originally married. Give that to me again quickly. They were originally married.
He married another girl. I was their best man mm-hmm. many years ago, 30 years ago.
Okay.
They were both Protestants. She walked out on him. Then,
and then he got remarried to another woman?
Yeah, like 30 years later. This is like in the last 7, 8 years. And she's a fallen away Catholic.
Yeah. Yeah, they're living in sin. I mean, the presumption is that that first marriage was valid. Until it can be shown that it wasn't, the presumption is that it is valid. And so based on that, if he's living with another woman, even if she's technically his wife under the law, that would still be living in sin.
For both of them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where the annulment process is very helpful, to ascertain whether or not there was a valid marriage in the first place. I hope that helps, Frank. God bless you, too. Nice talking to you. I'll be right back.